Real business owners.
Okay, guys, we've got an awesome guest for you today. This is episode 25 of Real Business Owners Podcast. Myself, Trevor Cowley, my partner as usual.
What's up?
Cale Goodman. Today we've got an awesome guest for you guys. Chase Diamond, is that right? Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Kind of like the rock that all the women, you know, definitely want on their hand, huh?
Yeah,
but spelled a little different, though.
A little different. My wife was stoked to get that last name, so we got married maybe 6 months ago, and she loves it.
Yeah, I bet.
Congrats on that, too, dude. That's cool.
She gets two diamonds then when she got married. She got you plus the big old rock, too. Huh?
I love that. I'm going to let her know that later. Appreciate
it. Exactly. So, if you will, I mean, obviously, you know, we just recently connected. You know, you don't know a whole lot about us in terms of anything outside of, you know, Instagram and vice versa. I don't know a whole lot about you. I know that you're kind of in the email marketing game. And, you know, when you emailed and reached out, I thought that that would be an interesting topic because, you know, me and Kel are obviously here to try to bring as much value that we possibly can to anybody listening or following our Instagram page. And I think that what you do is an interesting topic because I believe that some people think email marketing is dead. You know what I mean? And I would say I'm guilty of thinking that at one point prior to maybe going to some of the conferences and the events that we've gone through, and we've heard statistics that showed otherwise. So there's,
you know, what's funny, man, is I actually have friends that still make conversions in the old mailers, physical mailers to people's mailboxes. And so if that's not dead, email definitely ain't dead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But yeah, everything's email nowadays, man. I mean, we get our bills and, you know, our like utility bills, like we get, you know, everything comes to our email now.
Jump right in and tell us one, a little bit about yourself and how you got into the email marketing game and then kind of, you know, where you're at with your business currently and what your goals are with it.
Awesome. And yeah, Trevor, real quickly, I think I mentioned this when I connected, but the reason I reached out is one of my friends follows you guys on Instagram. And about a month ago, I was in New York filming a course with Founder Magazine.
My friend said,
hey, like when you have any downtime, like listen to these guys' podcast. I think you'd be great on it. But I started just going through your guys' podcasts and Ubers into the city, at the airport, on the airplane. I was so bored. And I started listening to your guys' podcast and you guys got me through my flight. So that's why I was really stoked to connect. I wanted to connect, wanted to meet you guys and really loved what you guys put out.
That's awesome. No, man, we appreciate that. That's awesome. It's still weird to hear that feedback because, you know, we're just a couple normal dudes, you know what I mean? And you know, we've had a lot of people tell us just over the years, hey, you guys, you know, have something special. You know, we know that a lot of people come to us in general, just friends and family for advice and in business and in life. And, you know, it took us long enough to finally put it all together to realize that we can bring a lot of value to people and I think
we're part of some business groups and mastermind groups and stuff as well ourselves, and you know, everyone's like, dude, if you feel like you got value to add to the world, get your podcast going, like what are you waiting for? So we're like, man, let's just do it. Like, we get all these people coming to us for advice and we're constantly consulting people. Let's just put it out there. We know we've done a lot of things wrong, we've done a lot of things right, and so there's learning experience on both sides of that. We've been loving this, dude, and we love that people actually get a benefit out of it as well. I really appreciate you saying that, dude.
Yes, it's so cool. Like, it reminds me of my conversation with my friends, and we always have kind of a joke, like, why don't we just record this? This is great content. Mm-hmm. And we never did. So, you know, kudos to you guys for actually, you know, recording this and doing this. I appreciate it. But to answer the question, sorry for the...
No, you're good. Hey, any time that you're gonna build us up or give us a compliment, dude, you can be you can be as distracted as you'd like, as long as this compliment's coming our way, we'll take it.
When I started my career, I guess you really could call it. I kind of started in community building. So I worked at this education technology company. That's a fancy way of saying we built products for students in high school, college, and postgraduate. And when I got there, my whole goal was to build a product that made learning more collaborative. And basically I came up with this idea of Facebook meets Google Drive, where we were able to connect students at college campuses to others in their class to be able to share study materials. They kind of had the shared drive where they could upload course notes for Econ 100, or if they both were business majors, they could kind of connect and start a study group at the library. So I kind of built this platform, and then I was like, okay, like, how do I market this? And again, I hope this is okay to say, but I went to college directories and found a bunch of emails and just started rifling off emails to students like, hey, you know, at San Diego State, we have this directory. There's 200 documents that I uploaded to my friends. You know, you might want to check it out, right? Students were responding like, hey, can I tell my friends about this? You know, hey, how do I join? So, you know, we went from San Diego State to like Arizona State. Same thing. We're emailing kids, messaging kids on Facebook. And we grew this community of people sharing and learning together into the hundreds of thousands of students. So email for me, and that's kind of what we'll be talking about and get to. Email was a huge acquisition channel as well as a huge retention channel. So every time like an important test was uploaded or every time a big meetup was happening, we would email students and then they would know about it that way. So that's kind of how we communicated with people on the platform. So that was kind of the first thing I did. And then from there, I built an email travel series. So a business all around email. Email was a whole business. And this email travel series was called The Discoverer. And it was once a week where we sent people this beautiful looking email that took about 3 to 4 minutes to read. And we crowdsourced from locals as well as tourists that lived in specific regions, you know, what to see, when to go, where to stay, you know, all those different types of things. And we got people really, really excited about it. And the way that we found these people was we went on Instagram, we found an email in their bio or an email in their contact button, and we were just rifling off emails like, you know, hey, Trevor came across the hashtag Utah photo, wanted to let you know we're going to be featuring Utah in our edition next week. Would you mind filling out this type form and letting us know more info about your favorite places? You know, if you're a local, please indicate that here, tell us what the locals do. You know, if you're a tourist, let us know what the tourists do. And we started collecting thousands and tens of thousands of people's responses on the type form. And then from there, right, as we were featuring people, as we were sending out these things, everyone was sharing it. So we scaled this email travel series to about 500,000 email subscribers in the first year. And cold email and kind of email in general was the huge acquisition and, again, retention tool. So I kind of kept having these themes of building these communities and these forums. And one of my buddies, his name's Nick, he's in the e-commerce space. He said to me, like, dude, like, I really feel like your email skill set of building communities is super relevant to how I could use you for e-commerce email marketing. Got a ton of clients that aren't doing anything with their list. They're sitting on tons of potential, you know, revenue. Like, can you learn this? So he sent me a course. I dove in, learned kind of e-commerce aspect of email marketing. And then I launched an agency specifically for email marketing for e-commerce. So that agency is called Boundless Labs. I launched it about 2 years ago. And today we work with about 30 clients that do anywhere from about 6 figures in annual revenue all the way up to about 8+ figures in annual revenue.
Very cool, man.
Well,
That's brilliant too, man. I love how you guys just started poaching people one at a time with their, you know, their Instagram bios. I mean, that's brilliant, dude. That's cool.
Started with the spam and shooting it out, you know, you got to start somewhere.
But
dude,
yeah, you're grabbing their attention. No, that's good. Their attention really I like it. I think that's,
I like it.
That's really cool. we only spam if people don't want to receive it. Right.
And
right.
Exactly.
So at first we were doing manually everything. We were sending off one email, two emails, and then we figured out a way to automate it. And, you know, we were sending hundreds of thousands of emails a month at one point, getting 40, 50% open rates, and we're getting 10 to 15% click-throughs and replies. So people loved it.
Yeah, okay.
That's really good.
So I'm guessing that the subject line itself is probably, you know, a pretty important piece of email marketing, right? If you can't capture their attention in an email box that's completely full based upon the subject, your open rate probably isn't going to be as high as you're going to want it to be. So is that like a huge, huge thing for you guys in terms of, you know, we're going to really think deep on what the name of this subject of this email is ultimately going to be?
So the subject line is incredibly important. There's also two other things that really have an impact on whether someone opened or not. Actually, a couple more than that. But so the from name, right? So do people recognize and like the from name? So if it's coming from, you know, Easier Accounting,
right,
people are on your list and they know you, you know, okay, that's plus one for you guys, right? If the subject line is enticing but not clickbaity, where when they open it, the content's relevant to the subject line, that's obviously really important. So the from name, the subject line, and then it's called the preview text or the pre-header text. So basically, when you're looking at an email in your inbox, right, you see the name, the subject, and you see that text before you open it. That's called either the pre-header or the preview text. Those are the three different things that are the most important on whether someone opens or not. So it's a name that's familiar. It's a subject line that is intriguing, but not kind of clickbaity or spammy. And it's pre-header text that gives you enough info, but leaves you wanting more. So those are three really important factors. And then the other factor that I thought of after I said those three was, where you land. Are you in their inbox? Are you in their promotions? Are you in social? Are you in spam? That also has a huge impact, right? If you're in inbox, you know, you're most likely going to be open more than you would if you're in promotions or
somewhere. Of course.
Those three or four things are really the ones that have the impact.
When I wake up in the morning, dude, like I hate notifications on my phone, you know, and it shows me how many I have in promotions and how many I have in my spam, how many I have in my inbox. So I just go and clear all that stuff out because I hate seeing the notification, and then I'll go through my inbox and actually open the ones in there.
I basically mark them all as red, and then I'll go through and see, do I recognize the name? Does this seem important? And then I'll mark those unread, and then later I'll go back and actually reply to those. I just kind of see more.
Are there any like simple hacks or tips or tricks to keep an email from going in the spam, especially if maybe one you haven't ever made contact with them, or you know, how do you do that? What's the highest likelihood of staying out of spam? What is something somebody could do?
So if we're talking about like opt-in email marketing and not cold email marketing,
gotcha.
Really the best thing for opt-in email marketing, when someone's gave consent to your list to mail them, it really is around following a best practices, right? So making sure that over time you're cleaning your list, so you have good list hygiene. So for example, like we recommend sending to people that have been engaged over the past like 90 days. So whether they've opened an email, clicked an email, placed an order, so the past 90 days are the people that we email the most frequently, where most people just email everyone, right? And the way that, you know, Google, Yahoo, Hotmail, et cetera, kind of ranks you and scores you is based off engagement, right? Both positive engagement, things like open rates, replying, click through, et cetera, as well as negative engagement, right? Marked as spam, unread, you know, bounced. But the more list hygiene you can practice and the better your content is, the more likely you are to stay out of spam. If you're a good sender that's sending things that people want and are kind of not sending to just everyone, that's a really good practice to make sure that you're more likely than not out of the spam folder. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be in the inbox. You also still could be in the promotions. Google and a lot of them are pretty good at figuring out whether someone's sending, you know, a personalized email that I would just email you versus kind of a promotional email like a business would send to their subscribers. So I think that's one, is following really good list hygiene.
To me, when you say that, to me, just again, it seems like very tedious work to constantly be cleaning the list, right? Is it tedious, or is there easy ways to do it? If it's tedious, is that why people hire somebody like you to help keep the list clean? Because that's one thing that we also heard at an event. He's like, look, I would rather have 100,000 emails, you know, with X amount of open rate, because then I can send more emails without getting marked as spam versus having a million emails, a list of a million people, but then I'm just spamming them and the open rate's at, you know, 0.5% versus, you know, 15% or 10% or whatever it is. So, you know, that was the first that I heard of, heard somebody talk about kind of scrubbing or cleaning the list, which is confirming, you're basically kind of backing that up and confirming that. But is there an easy way to scrub a list or clean a list, or is it kind of a tedious process if somebody was trying to take that on themselves?
The answer is somewhere in between, depending on how kind of rigorous you want to be. It can be somewhat tedious. That being said, like at the very least, I recommend you do it at least on a quarterly basis. So once every 3 months, you should be kind of cleaning your list. And so, for example, we do a lot of email marketing for e-commerce, as mentioned. So we use a platform called Klaviyo. It's really big for e-commerce. They have like this specific, are you guys familiar with Klaviyo?
I've never heard of it.
No, we have a guy in house that does a lot of marketing and stuff for our emails. And honestly, me and Trevor are pretty.
We're dumb. You know, when it comes, you know, for real, like I'm not here to blow smoke, dude. I tell a lot of people I'm an idiot, you know, at a lot of things, but we're smart enough to know that we're idiots at a lot of things. And we hire people who aren't the idiots in those specific areas.
Well, we talk about our vision a lot, man. Like we want our clients to get this. We want our potential clients to get that. Like, let's build these two buckets. And then these guys like you were able to be like, hey, man, like build it, you know, like let's put the content together. We'll help with that. But we want you to build the system as far as when they get it and how often and list cleaning, all that stuff. So, we kind of lean on that for that.
Your guys' question. So like in this particular cool tool called Klaviyo, they have what's called an email flow, which basically is an email automation. So basically, we build this segment of people that are unengaged, and they get almost like this breakup series where they get one or two emails that say like, hey, you know, I think when you first signed up, you know, you might have had different expectations, or, you know, you thought maybe we're going to send you different deals. Maybe you're unhappy. Maybe you just got busy. You know, whatever it is, it seems like you don't want to hear from us. If you do want to hear from us and we made a mistake, you know, click here. So we have like this automation that sends one or two emails out. And at the very end of the flow, it has this property that will add to someone's profile if they don't click that they want to stay, saying unengaged equals true. That way, when we go build a segment, it's pretty easy for us to say, exclude anyone that has this property of unengaged. And then, for example, like right now, we probably would not delete them out of the account just because we're in Q4 with Black Friday and Cyber Monday coming up. We'll probably want to leave those people in the account for now and maybe just send them like one or two deals separate than all the engaged people. But after the holiday in Q1, we're just going to go delete those people out because you're basically paying a lot of money for these people to be on your list and add no value, right? So with Klaviyo, you know, you could be paying, like, if you have 50,000 or 100,000 people on your list, like, you could be paying an extra $500 or $1,000 for these people that added no value to you. So you might as well delete those out. So long story short, certain things list cleaning can be pretty simple, and I don't think people have an excuse to say, oh, it's too confusing, it's too much work. And then there's a lot of other elements where that's why we're in business. We're in business to make sure we're following best practices, making sure that there's like a good image to text ratio in an email, right? You don't want it just to be like full image. You need to have some text. You need to do certain things. So yeah, there is a lot that goes into email. It definitely needs to be a focus, but certain of these things you could be doing, you know, once a quarter, and it shouldn't take too long.
So should, you know, I think some people, when they email, you know, customers or potential customers or somebody that was just on their website or whatever it is, I think sometimes people just email the email. Would you suggest, like, don't send anything out if it's, one, not relevant or doesn't bring value? Don't just say, hey, how you doing? Hope you have a Merry Christmas. Or should you be sending even the small stuff as well, like, you know, Happy Thanksgiving or Merry Christmas or whatever? Would you say that some of those holiday that basically is nothing, just to stay in front of somebody, is a good thing or a bad thing? Or should they only add value in terms of saving them money or giving them an opportunity to purchase a product that they've shown interest in, you know, previous? What's your take on staying in front of them? Does every single offer have to have value when you email somebody?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm partially kind of in the middle camp, right? Where, like, I'm thinking about some of our clients yesterday who sent for Veterans Day, right? And anyone, you know, listening, you know, I hope you guys had a great Veterans Day. You know, obviously, we're appreciative of that.
Likewise, bro.
So, for a lot of clients that, like, wanted to send Veterans Day offers just because, it's like, okay, like, if you have a lot of veterans on your list, that makes sense. But I think if you have to send, like, a Veterans Day offer just because you want to make money, like, you know, I think it's a coin toss, right? Like, if you have something special to offer and you have veterans, go for it. And if it's just to say, like, Happy Veterans Day, I think you probably could go without it. But more like, I think it really depends on, like, how often you're emailing people outside of that and what the engagement looks like. So if you are just sending a bunch of, you know, nonsense and people are, you know, unsubscribing and marking a spam and bouncing at a really high rate, then I would highly recommend pulling back and sticking to just, like, you only have to send things that they have offered. But if you're sending, you know, your blog posts and content and education and offers and all of that, and, you know, people are engaged and they're not complaining, then I think you kind of can get away with it. So I think every list, depending on how often people are complaining or not complaining, it differs. But I'd probably err on the side of sending value, but also don't be too strict in wanting to send value that you don't send enough. Most of our clients send about once or twice a week.
I like that.
Once to twice a week, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. So one question I have as we're talking about this, see, if I could go back and start my business all over again, man, like, we were all about buying leads, getting leads, having them come into us, and we have a telemarketing side of our company. We didn't have any email marketing. Mm-hmm. And if I could go back, I could start business over completely. Like, one thing I would do is I would double down on, like, the fulfillment and the value to give to clients to keep them and retain them longer and build that lifetime value of a customer. And so that was the whole reason I wanted to jump into emails, because I'm like, I want them to get more from us, the people that are already clients. I want them to see us. I want them to, you know, get our videos. I want them to get our emails. I mean, tax tips throughout the year. Like, I want to put as much as I can in front of them so they feel more value. But that was the reason I wanted to jump in to start emailing customers. I know there's a lot of people like listening probably to this episode actually that are like, man, I need to get a better email follow-up game going to my potential customers. So what do you recommend are good ways to just get started, from whether you want to double down on giving your clients more value or you want to double down on getting more clients through email interaction? Like, what do you recommend, like, just first couple actionable steps would be for them to just get started?
After they've explored hiring you, of course. You know, no, I mean, we definitely, at the end of the day, some people will probably be at the point where, you know, they should be outsourcing some stuff, right? Like, focus on the shit that brings in money. You know, and if you're already busy with what you're doing, outsource some shit, right? To people who know what they're doing. But if you're at a phase where you're just kind of growing and maybe you don't have that extra revenue to outsource it, what are some things to maybe some beginners like Kel's talking about?
Because when I first was like, man, I want my customers to get more, but I'm so not tech savvy and this and that. And I know I needed to learn a lot more, but dude, someone turned me on to AWeber and I went in there and tried to learn this platform. It was like another language to me, dude. Because I knew nothing, right? Like, I'm just this phone sales guy that started building this company. Like, I knew nothing, man. And so I'm like trying to figure out this AWeber platform. And then someone's like, no, go to Constant Contact. I'm like, it's the same stuff. MailChimp. I'm like, dude, it's all confusing to me. Like, where do I get started, right? And so I had no idea. I just knew I wanted to get my customers more content, more value, more, you know, whatever. And so I don't know, is the best platforms or what are some good things that you would recommend to make it simple?
Where do you start hiring somebody? Where do you start collecting data? How do you start collecting data? Maybe that's step one, because, you know.
Yeah, so I guess starting from the beginning, right? Like, the way that you collect emails traditionally, depending on whether you're an e-commerce business, you're a, you know, a SaaS, you're a B2B, whatever it is. So, like, for example, like in e-commerce, it's very common practice to have something like pop up when you land on the website, right? You see like a pop up that says, you know, enter your email to get 10% off, or hey, you know, enter your email to get free shipping code. So like those pop ups, you know, there's now things that fly out, which basically is just something that comes from like the corner. It's not as obtrusive. People are testing like fly outs. And again, like there's ways that people trigger them. There's like best practices. So instead of triggering like a pop up or a fly out right when someone lands there, we typically wait about 3 to 6 seconds after someone's hit the site. So it's not too soon where people kind of can figure out what you're about, but it's not too late where they're about to bail. So that's kind of what we do, is we trigger these pop-ups after about 3 seconds. And then other times we'll show things like on exit intent. So if someone's leaving, a pop-up might say like, hey, before you go, enter your email to get this content, right? And then they'll enter their email. So that's one really big way that we collect emails. Another is if your blog content is really popular and a lot of traffic's going there, we'll have embedded subscription forms on a blog post. So you're reading a blog post, and then there'll be like a little call to action that says like, you know, enter your email to receive our best tips of the week, right? So within content, there's embedded forms. And then the last way, and this one is particularly for like e-commerce, maybe SaaS, like on someone starting the checkout process, that's when you're entering like, you know, your shipping information, your contact info, you ask for an email or a phone number there. So those are typically the ways that we collect emails. It's when someone visits your website, when someone's scrolling through your content, or when someone's kind of in the funnel of checking out and they enter their email there, whether they complete it or not, as long as they press submit, we'll gather their email. So those are kind of a few ways that we go about collecting emails.
What's your thoughts on purchasing lists? You know, because I know people have reached out, hey, we've got, you know, we can email, you know, we got half a million email lists that we can do this. And it costs, is that like a, you know, are you more of, hey, build it your own internal list? Or do you have a hybrid where you're like, hey, yeah, you want to build your own internal list for, you know, ongoing promotions. But, you know, there is a place, you know, in this industry for buying lists, for instance, like a Black Friday sale, or maybe very specific times that you would want to maybe try that, or is your thoughts just in general like, no, you only build your own shit, don't buy none of that garbage, or, you know, tell us your thoughts on that a little bit.
Yeah, so there's two answers that on the B2C side, so emailing consumers, you definitely have to be a little bit more careful around sending kind of like cold emails and offers. Just kind of got to make sure you're kind of in the white, right? You're not really in the gray, you're not in the black. So you have to make sure that you're compliant. So depending on who you're buying lists from, like, you have to make sure that they have the proper permissions for you to mail them. And then also too, like, depending on the list size that you're buying, like, you know, whether you're using Klaviyo, MailChimp, things like that, it's pretty obvious for them to know whether you bought a list. If the engagement's really bad and it bounces at a really high rate, they're going to know. So I think for B2C, like, if you buy a list, I would probably even start trying to upload those to, like, Facebook as, like, a custom audience and start hitting people and warming them up that way. And then you could probably start trying to hit the people that have engaged, like, with emails. So I think on B2C, like, I've tried that. I've had moderate success. Like, a lot of times I've done decent. Other times I've gone terrible. But on B2B, I've had a lot of success with either, you know, buying leads or, you know, scraping leads. So, for example, MailChimp and Shopify had a partnership. And then at one point they announced that they were kind of were breaking up. MailChimp recently announced that they split from Shopify. Shopify recently rolled out their own kind of email platform. So that's kind of why they wanted to split from MailChimp. But what we had done is we had went onto a platform called Apollo.io. And it basically had details around, like, what email platform people were using. So what we had done is we had gone on and grabbed all the people using MailChimp and Shopify. And we had sent them an email saying, like, hey, I don't know if you saw this article, but MailChimp and Shopify are breaking up. You know, good thing for you. We're Klaviyo experts. We'll work with you to migrate you to Klaviyo, and then we'll stay working with you there. So we emailed people with a really relevant current event. So that's super, you know, detrimental to their business. Your data is not going to flow through from your e-commerce store to your email platform. They're not going to easily talk. So that means you're going to have data in MailChimp that's not up to date. So we emailed all these people saying, like, hey, let us work with you. We'll switch you over. And we probably landed close to a dozen clients from that outreach just because it was so relevant. And they already were thinking about that. They just didn't know where to start. Like, how do I find the people to do that? So I think with relevance like that, and for B2B, I would do that all day long.
Yeah, that's okay. Really smart.
Cool. Hmm. Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, if you're using MailChimp, Klaviyo, whatever you're using to stay in front of people, right, on an email list, what are some of the consequences that could happen provided, you know, you get marked as spam too much, or, you know, your open rate's not as high? You're obviously running a risk of getting your account shut down, correct?
Yeah, so the big worries are, yeah, your account could be shut down if MailChimp or those people think you're a spammer.
Spammer,
they won't hesitate to shut you down. So the way that a lot of those services work is they build up, like, a reputation with Google, Yahoo, AOL, and a few bad agents, a few spammers could really, you know, take down their whole system. At this point now, like, MailChimp's pretty big where a few bad people wouldn't. But for some of the smaller ESPs, so email service providers, if you have a lot of spammers on there sending a lot of bad mail and you don't boot them off pretty quickly, that will affect everyone else that's on that same shared IP. So typically, like, you know, there could be 50 to 100 other brands on that same IP, and one person can go ruin it for all of them. So they're pretty quick to boot you off. And then the other possibility is that you're going to be then in spam. So you get kicked off your platform, so you can't send more emails. And then whenever you go to try to send emails to another platform, you're probably going to be in spam.
So even if you take that data, migrate it over to a new platform, for instance, if you go from Constant Contact to MailChimp, because you got marked as spam over here, your likelihood of being marked as spam again and getting that account shut down again is going to probably be just, you know, way higher is what you're saying.
Yeah, because they're looking, like, specifically at MailChimp, but they're also looking at the domain, right? The domain's the one that's being marked as spam.
Oh, gotcha.
You've got, like, in MailChimp, they have, you know, hundreds of thousands of businesses. So the person that's actually taking the hit is you as the business owner. It's being reflected in your domain. Like,
gotcha.
Google, Yahoo, everyone's keeping a log of
wherever you're trying to direct the traffic, basically, that's what's getting marked as spam, not okay.
You'd have to set up, like, a new domain and kind of start slowly warming up and building the trust.
Got you.
So it's better to always stay and err on the side of being cautious with having the trust versus losing it. It's kind of a nightmare to start over.
I got a two-part question for you.
Yeah, of course.
So for someone like me, if I'm like, all right, I want to hire someone to help me manage all this stuff.
Yeah.
The content still really needs to kind of come from me, like my business, you know? So I got to take time and write out, you know, these email sequences. How many do you recommend people kind of put together for their email sequence before, you know what I mean, they can, like, kind of take a break or whatever and then continue to, you know, build more, I guess. Because that's something I struggle with. I'm like, because I get in modes where I'm like, oh, I got all this great content ideas and I got to sit down and write it all down. And then that was the second part of my question is, do you guys actually take and like edit that for them as well? You get someone like me that just spits content out, but I'm not like the best at grammar and all that stuff. Do you guys do editing? And then how long, you know, how much, you know, content do you think that you need to get someone started, I guess?
Yeah, of course. So I think part one, right, is around the content. I think depending on your business, right? So for example, with e-commerce, there's about, you know, 8 or 9 email automations that we build out. And within each one, you know, there's 2 to 4 emails. And this is kind of just the core that we're talking about. So within the 8 or 9 automations, I'll have 2 to 4 emails. There's about 2 or 3 that I recommend you have to have at the gates. So that's like the welcome flow. So making sure that you're greeting people who enter their email. Now, welcome to Easier Accounting, welcome to Boundless Labs, you know, welcome to whatever it is. To having at least a few emails in that welcome series, I think it's super important because people come to expect it. That welcome series drives a lot of revenue. So that's one. I think if you're also an e-commerce brand, having some kind of abandoned cart is also a prereq. You have to have that. There's no point to do it email if you're not going to do abandoned cart. It's low-hanging fruit. It drives tons of revenue. And then the last one I think you have to do is a customer thank you. You have to thank people after they purchase. That helps reduce buyer's remorse. That helps build the bond. There's so many important things for saying thank you. So if I was an e-commerce brand knowing that there's a lot to do, I would start with those 3 things. And then as you have time, you know, I would build out things like a browse abandonment. So for example, it's kind of like an abandoned cart, but you have someone's email and they're just kind of casually viewing products. So we could say like, you know, hey, Trevor, saw that you were kind of just looking at our hat, wanted to remind you that this item's selling fast, you know, make sure you add it to your cart. So that's another one. The one I mentioned earlier about like the breakup series, which is called like the Sunset Unengaged. I would also have that one. You know, there's like a customer win back. So there's all these ones that you want to have and you want to get to. And that's just kind of V1, right? There's like more advanced flows that you want based off of vendor, based off of products people are viewing, based off of upsells. But I would just start with the bare minimum, the core, which again is like what's important to your business. And it probably most likely is a welcome, some kind of purchase related thing, and a thank you.
Let me ask you this. I mean, so you guys handle the majority, like if somebody retained you and they owned an e-commerce, you know, whether selling Amazon or whatever the hell, you know, I don't know if there's specific, you know, places that they have to sell to work with you or if it's just anything online. But so you guys basically deal with, you know, putting the content together and emailing it out, or is that something that the owner is hands-on with, or how hands-on, I guess, is an owner when they do work with you?
Yeah, so our team personally is built to handle everything other than video for videography and the photography. So other than the videography and photography, we write the copy, we do the email design, we do the A/B testing, we do the second.
Done. You got our business, dude.
we're not in e-commerce, bro. Yeah.
So what, dude? You can do service.
I guess we have the Amazon store though.
We do have
an Amazon store. We gave a guy a couple hundred grand for that.
Crazy.
And that's actually working out.
Question, like we can do everything. That being said, like depending on the client, so we work with this client out of New York called Tushy. And no, they're not like a porn company. So don't go to tushy.com, type in hellotushy.com. That will probably save you.
But yeah, don't go to Google and type in Tushy anyways. And don't hit images.
Yeah, the only reason I mentioned them is like they have a copywriter that they were super adamant on using. Because this person is a stand-up comedian. Like, they are way funnier than anything we could ever write. So there's some clients that have someone internal that is just such an amazing copywriter and is so central to everything they do. Email copy, social copy, website copy. So in cases like that, we're like, yeah, by all means, you know, we don't want to jump in. You can do this way better. So I would say probably about 25% of the time, our clients prefer to write the copy themselves. And then 75% of the time, they prefer to outsource it. So more often than not, we're the ones writing the copy. And again, like in the beginning, there's typically this handoff process where we're kind of working together on copy, right? They might take a stab at it. We'll write some edits. We'll take a stab at it. They'll make some edits. Kind of getting up to speed. We never want to pretend or assume that we know more than the business owner or their own brand, but we're pretty quick learners. So typically after about a month of working pretty close with the business owner, we'll be pretty self-sufficient in terms of taking it on and running with it.
I would probably want to do some content myself. I mean, and obviously videos and stuff. You guys would pull a lot of content out of that. But do you feel like working with? I guess I am just asking this question for me. But do you feel like you guys could work with somebody in a service based industry like accounting, or is it maybe you're like I want to just stick with e-commerce?
That was something I was going to ask as well. Whether you ever plan on venturing out of e-commerce, why you're just focusing specifically on one vertical.
Like our marketing guys turned more into our tech guy helping fine tune our CRMs, and we've got them pulled in like 40 different directions. And our email has really suffered from that because we started on it, and then there's a lot of things we didn't finish. And you know what I mean? Like, we want our customers to get a certain sequence. We want our potential customers. We want to make sure we're organized in how we're grabbing, you know, the emails. And honestly, we haven't finished it. And so it has suffered a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. So for us personally, like, I had an agency before this where, you know, we said we did everything, right? And we did. But that always, to me, after reflecting after that business and kind of leaving that business, was like, man, when I tell people we did everything, they probably heard that we did nothing. So for me, kind of saying, you know, we do everything, like, I would talk to friends, everyone would be like, yeah, sure, like, Chase, I don't know what he does, right? People would walk away, even friends and family, like, not understanding what I did, right? I do SEO, I do, you know, paid Facebook, I do SEM, right? Like, I do email, I do influencers. And for the second agency, after I have conversations with friends and family, I basically say to them, if they're not in the space, you know, all those promotions you get on Black Friday, you know, all those Valentine's emails, you know, all that spam you get in your inbox, that's what I do. I do email. You know, we help our brands make 20 to 30% of their total revenue from email, and we focus on e-commerce. That has been so tangible and so memorable for friends and family. But I want to say, of the 30 clients, probably, you know, half of them are from referrals. So the fact that we've really branded ourselves as, we do e-commerce, and Klaviyo in particular is the platform that we specialize on, that has been so important from our business going from, you know, we started out doing all the platforms, we probably were doing like 10 or 20K a month in revenue. And now we're right around like the 60, 65K a month in revenue. And we're, you know, our goal for Q1 is to hit six figures. And so long story short and kind of long-winded way of answering, like, I'm so focused and obsessed with e-commerce and email marketing and branding myself that way, because all the business has been coming in that way. Anytime someone in my network knows anyone that has an e-commerce store, even if they don't need email, they're forcing people that, like, my way. So so with your guys' business, like, for me to have to, like, shift my lens, and I probably have to bring on people that really understood accounting. Like, our goal is to be an expert in what we're selling. And now we've we've been in e-commerce for about 2 years. Like, we are so good. We work with, you know, almost every single vertical and niche, CBD, skincare, hair care, apparel, watches, you know, you name it. So yeah. I like you guys. I'd be willing to give you guys advice. But,
We do actually have a couple e-commerce businesses that we should talk on, so for sure. Yeah, like, we have the supplement company that we've launched, and we lost a lot of money in it, but we're not done with it yet. We kind of just rebranded the structure because we learned some things. We were doing kind of more of a trial model, and we got our butts kicked on that. Now we're going more to a straight sell model, and so there are some things that I think we could do together on that. But it does pique my interest on seeking out some guys like you in the accounting space to get that more fine tuned, because people gotta understand this. It's not, they look at things like this as a cost to their business, like, oh, I gotta hire this, outsource this guy, and blah blah blah. Like, look at the revenue you're leaving on the table. Look at that, not what it's gonna cost you. Look at what it's gonna bring into you. You know, that is something I'll definitely have to look into for easier accounting too. So
yeah, I think with email in particular, everyone always sees it as like a sunk cost. Like, email's not sexy, right? Like, you guys talked about it, right? People always say email's dead. They don't understand the power of it. So that's why people are typically hesitant to invest into it. But if you're talking about, like, influencers or paid social, I feel like people pump money in that all day long, and they don't realize that they're spending a lot more money on acquisition than they are on retention. But the easiest way to convert someone on your list, someone that's already familiar with you. So our thing is, we partner with, like, agencies that do paid acquisition, and we tell them, hey, if we work with you on retention and we drive these conversions, you're going to have so much more money to invest back into the top of the funnel. So that's really kind of part of our pitch.
I liked it a lot, man. It's definitely an investment for sure. Yeah. A positive investment if you get the right people too in your corner. And if you're like us and you're like, it's just something that has been a mess and you've been letting go, like, you should definitely look into a service like that for sure, because there is so much money left on the table there. So
absolutely. And going back actually to a question that you had asked, I don't think I had answered around, like, so for your particular business, like, what kind of things you should be sending to customers. So I think for you guys, right, like, I'm sure you already probably send stuff about this podcast. Like, I feel like this
tax is, tips, things tax like tip. That. Yeah.
Anytime you guys are featured on other podcasts, or whether you guys have done, like, any interviews with any publications, right? I think the more social proof and value you provide, and just show that, like, damn, these guys are hustlers, they're killing it, they're at the top of the game. Like, I think the more that you would reinforce that, the more A, that people want to stay with you, I'm sure B, that they love you guys as people, right? That's huge. That's so valuable, right? Like, if they like you guys and you do great work, they're not going anywhere. And then three, like, if you're always sending them things that show that you guys are the best without, you know, being kind of super arrogant, then they're going to be thinking about, like, oh, counting these guys, here's my friend, right? So, like, you're going to always, if you're top of mind and sending relevant content, hopefully they'll forward that content. If it's around tax or kind of accounting season, hopefully they'll, you know, tell their friends and family. So I feel like if you guys kind of pump that type of content out, that would be huge.
Yeah. I like that. I appreciate that.
That's good. Let me ask you this. What are some of the biggest struggles that you face just as an entrepreneur in general? You know, whether it's patience, whether it's loss of money, whether it's, you know, partnerships that went south, or, you know, what are just some of your struggles that you've gone through in the couple years? Because, you know, that's one thing that's guaranteed is struggle. You know, success isn't guaranteed, but struggle is. So what are some of the things that you face that that you think could be a good learning lesson maybe for somebody else that's kind of going through this entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, my mind is now spinning and trying to racing answering that. There's so many things I think about. Trevor, I think I told you, and this is related but unrelated, that on our call that I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, like, you know, when I was 13. So for me personally, right, like as an entrepreneur, like trying to eat healthy, and, you know, when I talked to you guys this morning, I was on a run, right? So making sure that I'm selfishly focusing on eating well and working out, I think has been super important. There's definitely been times throughout my business where I've been so swamped and stressed and I hadn't had those outlets to be able to work out and eat well, that I feel like I kind of just went down this vicious path, right? Of like, like working 12, 14, 16 hour days, you're not sleeping, you're stressed. Like, so I feel like personally making sure that you're in shape, that you're healthy, that your mind is active and your body's active. I think for me, that's been a big one, a big learning through the good and the bad.
No, I like that. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah. And then another one right now is like, there's two things. One, there's so many good things happening in my life, but still so many good things. It's still stressful. So I got married in June. My wife and I are expecting our first baby in April. So that's super exciting.
Nice. About that's awesome.
Thank you. And
congrats, bro.
We're in the process of about to sell our condo this week, about to buy, you know, a new home. So it's like, we have all these good things, and it's like, I'm sure everyone looks at it as like, oh man, like this is so great. And while all this, and I'm not complaining, it's like, I've got all this. And then like Q4 for e-commerce is like tax season for accountants, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
There's so much going on. So with all that being said, it's like the time that I need to be spending finding new people to bring on the team, I'm now spending, you know, signing papers for the house, right? And I'm out working on looking at cribs. Like, you know, so I think personal and business life, like I wish I had an extra hour or two every single night to spend on Upwork, LinkedIn, trying to recruit new talent, because we're scaling. You know, we signed 5 or 6 clients in the past week, and we now need to scale. We hired our first employee about 2 or 3 months ago, and she's been amazing. Like, I want to go hire 4 or 5 of her, and it took us a long time to find her. So I'm kind of rambling, but it's making sure that you stay healthy, you know, making sure that you have good relationships. So, you know, my wife and I are at, you know, an all-time high in our relationship, not that we've ever been at a low. So everything is really good, and I just have this excitement and this momentum, but I'm also so tired and stressed.
Yeah, totally understand that.
Yeah, man. No, we've been there many times over. You know, you kind of forget about yourself in the process, right? Yeah. You know, a lot of people end up putting themselves last, and then they end up getting exhausted and tired and depressed and wondering why they're doing all this stuff that they're doing when they're putting so much stress on their bodies and they're not really taking care of the vehicle themselves that's getting them where they ultimately wanted to be, you know. No, I love that answer. It was a great answer.
It's really easy, too, when you got all that stuff going on to be like, finding all these excuses, right?
Yeah.
Instead of all these solutions and just pushing through on things too. So I commend you, dude, because I've been there and I've been on both sides of it. Like, I've been in moments where I've got all this going on, new babies coming, new houses, new, you know, all this stuff, illnesses, whatever. And then you're like, well, I just can't do this. And you kind of almost handicap yourself mentally.
Justify.
Instead of just being like, no, dude, I just got to prioritize my time and find a way and schedule things out. And I've had to do that. So I've been, you know, I've been on one end of it where I've bought into those excuses of like, this is all just too much and too hard right now. And then I've been on the other end of, okay, no, I got to find a way through this. And so I commend you, dude, for being as young as you are and you know, aware as you seem to be too, to find a way through that stuff instead of just buy into the excuse side of it.
We talked about that quite a bit this week in terms of, you know, you don't have to sacrifice one thing for the other, you know, and I think a lot of people believe that if they go all in on their business, their health, something has to be the sacrificial lamb, right, of why you're going to be successful. I'm going to put myself last, so my health has to, you know, basically be in jeopardy or suffer, right? That's the sacrifice I'm making for my business, or my relationship has to suffer so that I can give more time to my business. Yep. You know, we came to the realization that nothing really has to suffer. You know, you just have to prioritize the things that are important to you, your health, your work, your relationships. You know, if those things are important enough, they can all work in harmony.
Yeah, you can have both. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's why. Oh, sorry. I'm so focused on building the team, right? Because until about a few months ago, it was just my partner and myself, and now we have one, you know, kind of employee. We leverage kind of part-time freelancers, right? But when they're part-time and they're freelance, and while they're great, they're not obsessed about my business, right? Because they have other clients. So that's part of it. It's like we're now trying to find more of the type of employees, you know, that we currently have in this girl. And then the other thing I wanted to add is like, in my mind, right, I keep battling like this thing of like, I'm so type A, I'm so like, go after it. But in my mind, I'm like, should I be content with where I'm at? And then I'm like, no, I want more. So it's like, you know, like, what I have all these things going, right? Like, you know, baby on the way, marriage, you know, find a new home, like doing all these things, business is going well. It's like, it's so easy in your mind to be like content. And then every time I get content, I snap out of it and like, no, I want more, right? Like, why stop? Like, we're on such a great trajectory. But I really believe like in the power of momentum. Like, when you have something good going for you, don't stop, right? As soon as you pump the brakes, it's so hard to get that spark going again. So that's kind of where I've been going too, is like, we have a great thing going. We're going to find a way to make it happen. So let's not stop.
I like that, dude. So true. Yeah. I hate actually when people are like, you know, like, dude,
when are you
care about
happy?
His business. When's enough
happy?
Enough?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, man, you know what? You just don't get it.
You don't get it.
If that's not you, it's not you, man. Like,
the reality is that certain people are just wired to achieve. It's not necessarily just money, but you know what you're capable of. And for whatever reason, when you let off the gas, your self-worth also, you know, kind of goes down because you know you're capable of more. When you know you're capable of more and you're not doing it, that's when you start suffering internally as an individual. Your confidence goes down, your self-worth goes down. When you know that you're pushing yourself, again, whether it's, you know, health, business, relationships, and you're giving it all in all of those areas, that's when your self-confidence, self-love, all of that will be at an all-time high. And
it's not greedy either, dude. Like, no. People don't understand, like, when they look at someone that is an ultimate achiever, they're like, oh, you know what he could be doing to give back more and this, that. Well, maybe he is, you know? Like, that's one of my goals, man, is, like, I want ultimate success financially and everything because I do want to give back more. I give now, but I want to give even more. And so I can make more of an impact if I don't let off the brakes and I ride that momentum like you're saying, you know. I make more of a positive impact in being an example as well as actually physically giving to people that literally need. So
yeah, I love that one. I think, Trevor, I mentioned this to you on our call, but so being diagnosed with Crohn's, I got diagnosed at the age of 13. You know, for the first year or two, I was so sick that I couldn't do anything. But as soon as I got better, for me, I was like, the reason I was so sick is because no one at the time really knew what Crohn's disease was. There was such a lack of awareness, and that was the huge problem. Had I known what I was dealing with, I would be able to get help so much quicker. So I started volunteering and getting involved with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. They do about $50 million a year in fundraising for Crohn's and colitis. And for anyone not familiar with Crohn's is inflammation of your digestive tract, and ulcerative colitis is inflammation of your colon. So I started volunteering, you know, setting up walks, you know, doing marketing, doing this and that. And at the age of 16, I became the youngest board member of this charity. So, from 16 to 22, I served a 6-year board term and kind of have since stayed pretty involved. And that part to me was so important in terms of finding mentors. So I was on the board with all these people that ran companies. You know, I was learning this thing called marketing that I had no idea about, right? So that's really how I started my career in marketing, was just like getting sick with this disease, trying to do everything I could, you know, posting on social media, you know, trying to reach out to papers, you know, in-person events. And that's actually really a lot of what I credit my career to, is being diagnosed with Crohn's. So while obviously I don't wish it upon myself or anyone, I've been so fortunate looking back that like I've been able to do so much for that, and it's done so much for me in return.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that, you know, a common theme is when people are at a low place, it's usually going to, you know, if you're at the lowest spot on a trampoline, that means it's about to launch you to the, the new highs that you've never been at, right? So you were at the lowest point of your life at one point, you know, probably very depressed, very, you know, and you committed to something that gave you purpose, right? Because that meant something to you. So you followed your heart that's of something that meant something. You found your way into another purpose that you have, which is ultimately marketing. If you would have never had that, you would have never sat in there and understood the power of marketing, meaning you could have gone off and, you know, worked a 9-to-5 job for the rest of your life and, you know, retired at 65 and, you know, ate whatever Social Security income could provide to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that a lot of people that are listening to this probably are at a low place and they're trying to find answers. You know, usually when you're listening to podcasts and you're trying to soak in information, you want something more. Something's missing. There's a new threshold that you want to hit. And so if any of you guys are listening and you're at a low place right now, just understand you need to keep your eyes peeled for opportunity while you're at that low point, because there are opportunities. Just don't be blinded by your current state, right? Don't be blinded in your own. Don't just sit and loathe in your own shit.
Right.
You know, there are opportunities at low places. You know, people just think that they have to be at a high place, and then once you're up here, then opportunities start presenting themselves. They're all over the place. You just have to be looking. And that's something that you did, and you took full advantage of it. And you know, good for you. Kudos to you, man. Look at you. You're on the future biggest podcast in the world. No, I'm just kidding, bro. But
not really.
Yeah, kidding. Sorry. You know, I have to believe it before it happens. So, how do people find you, brother, if they want to connect with you? So we'll go ahead and wrap everything up.
Yeah, I know we got some e-commerce.
Yeah, people. Listeners, guaranteed. Yeah. How do they find you and connect with you, bro?
So on Instagram, it's a great place. Chase, C-H-A-S-E, Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R, and then Diamond without the A, so it's D-I-M-O-N-D. So Chase, Hunter, Diamond, no A in Diamond. So Instagram's a great place. LinkedIn's a great place. My company website is boundlesslabs.io, so boundlesslabs.io. And my personal email, if anyone wants to email me, is Chase. diamond@gmail.com.
Cool, man. We appreciate you, you know, reaching out to us. And, you know, when I talked to Kel originally about, hey, this dude just emailed about email marketing, you know, we thought it would be a great topic, because I don't think that there's any business that that doesn't need to stay in front of their customers more.
Well, there's a ton of businesses, too, that just really don't know where to start with something like this, too.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Because we've been there, and we still aren't fine-tuned in it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's an awesome service that you provide, man, for sure.
Thank you.
Guys, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure you go check out Chase on either Instagram, email him, check out his website. If you're interested in some of his services, again, definitely touch base with him. He'll kick ass for you. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you rate and review the podcast. Share it with family and friends, anybody that could get value out of it. We appreciate all you guys tuning in. Have a kick-ass day.